Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What does it take to earn a decent living on a service industry salary? Tens of thousands of full-time workers in North Texas live on the minimum wage of $7.25 an hour, which adds up to a little under $300 a week before taxes. In addition to the challenges of stretching those paychecks to cover food, rent, clothing, transportation, health care, and child care, many minimum wage workers struggle to find schedules flexible enough to allow them to take care of family obligations. The not-for-profit Demeter Project is trying to reinvent the American workplace, starting with investments in a Deep Ellum coffee house called It's a Grind and Chill Bubble Tea on Inwood Road in Dallas. Demeter is committed to paying workers $13.50 an hour, along with full health benefits, and to adjusting worker schedules to give them time for personal and family needs. Cannon Flowers is CEO of the Human Rights Initiative in North Texas. Serena Simmons Connolly is co-founder of the Human Rights Initiative and director of the Harold Simmons Foundation. Together, they founded the Demeter Project, which aims to improve the community by improving workplaces and raising wages. Cannon, Serena, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
It's good to be here.
It's so good to have you. And start by talking about what a living wage really means, because we hear that and we all sort of imagine what it might be. But what calculations go into that?
Well, I got into this without knowing the calculation and having, you know, read about this idea of a living wage for many years. My background is in social work, and then I've been in philanthropy for the last 10 years. And I was always, you know, curious as to, you know, I read about the theory of the living wage, but how do you apply it and what does it mean? And I had my basic understanding of it was that a third of your income would be covering your housing needs. Mm-hmm. And just I went into it with that idea. And then Cannon did much more research on it to figure out how would we apply this in Dallas.
So what we did, Chris, is we partnered with the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Amy Glassmeyer. She has done extensive research on poverty in America. And so by region across the United States, her and her classes have dissected how much it costs to live in that particular region, breaking it down to food, child care, medical, housing, transportation, everything that goes into it, and then assuming an employee is working 40 hours a week or 2,080 hours a year, what would it take in order to sustain a livable income as opposed to a minimum wage? The history of the minimum wage, of course, in 1938, the whole discussion of the minimum wage was simply to pay employees enough just to have a house. Mm-hmm. And so from 1938 to today, in the last decade where this conversation of living wage has become so important, this kind of regional data that the schools put together has been extremely helpful to us in determining what is a living wage. I've taken their research data, and then we've done our own sanity checks, too, to make sure, and we have been within 10 cents an hour of their research.
The regional thing is really interesting because clearly you can live pretty well on, I guess, $13.50 an hour comes out to about $27,000 a year. You can live pretty well on that in Dallas, modestly, but you couldn't live on that in New York City. So is that why
exactly.
regional data is the
exactly.
important thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have, there's a, for New York, for Alaska, and for Hawaii, it's substantially higher.
Mm-hmm. So the other issue here is flexibility. You know, if I need 2 hours to take my kids to the dentist, I can adjust my job. But if I answered phone somewhere or was standing behind a counter, there might not be anyone to take my place. Does that require in all these businesses additional people on the payroll in order to cover for those occasional absences?
I don't know that it what we've noticed is a marked increase in productivity mm-hmm. and job commitment. Our employees will usually schedule those things after conversations with their coworkers, and so it breeds sort of a whole teamwork approach to scheduling and managing and knowing what's got to happen in those stores at certain peak hours.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, someone will say, well, I have to be somewhere Thursday morning, but if you open for me, then I'll close for you on Thursday afternoon.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And of course, if you've got a child who's sick today, we're all flexible in those kinds of situations. But I think that's part of the culture that we're attempting to build as well, is that we're all in this together. And you can, in those stores, you can definitely feel that spirit in those stores.
So how did this idea come about to actually start with businesses specifically, as opposed to simply coming up with a protocol and saying, here are our suggestions? Why start with something that is working?
Mm-hmm. Well, and this brings me back to when you did the introduction. We're actually a for-profit. We're not a nonprofit.
Oh, okay.
So we're at Demeter Project is an LLC. And my background is in nonprofits, and so is Canon's. And I think we got frustrated with trying to, being called in to fix people's problems on the social side of life when we're not seeing any other systems helping us solve these problems. So we thought, well, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could make an ethical workplace? I mean, we spend all of our time at work anyway, you know, and that's what we prize in the society. You know, capitalism, the market, we love that. So why don't we make that a place where you can live, a place that helps solve your problems and that's enjoyable to be at.
My work through Human Rights Initiative, what HRI does is provide legal services to people who have fled to the United States because of political persecution, mm-hmm. religious persecution. We also assist immigrant women and children inside the United States who have been victimized. So my work through HRI, I would see them go through this arduous legal process. And then you have the social side that would kick in once they were granted relief, and you'd see them go into some pretty bad work situations. That goes on for years. And in seeing those, and the person, once they move through that adversarial process and gain their freedom in the United States, they're grateful for anything. So they'll tolerate a lot. So for these clients, you have a relationship of 2 years, 2 or 3 years. Once they move through, you get this feedback. And we all know what it's like to work in the service industry. And these were people who were tolerating conditions because they thought they had to. They thought this was the cultural norm of working inside the United States. Then to the conversation of a living wage, and my background prior to the nonprofit sector is in corporate finance and 23 years with Texas Instruments. So my view on it was, from a business perspective, can this be done? And we didn't want to adopt or propose some sort of business theory and attempt to sell it. We actually wanted to start a business and see if it could be done. So that's how we got to where we are.
Are you making a profit yet?
We're not making a profit. And in most business models, I mean, within the first 5 years, it is a struggle. We are making incredible progress. The first year was extremely tough, and we're seeing continued productivity increases and continued traffic flow to the stores. So there's definitely a light at the end of the tunnel.
Mm-hmm. So how do the investments work? My understanding is that the coffee shop, It's a Grind, is owned completely by the Demeter Project. Is
correct.
That correct?
Okay.
Yes.
And then the other business, the bubble tea business, is an investment but not wholly owned.
Correct.
Is that right? So what's the difference between how the two are organized?
Well, part of our vision is to we can make progress with one of these ventures at a time. 100% ownership in the coffee house, a fractional ownership in another business, which would then supplement the revenues coming into Demeter Project. But then it would also help us replicate this business model. And we believe part of our market appeal is what we're doing and the way we're treating the customers and the way we're treating suppliers and the way we're attempting to improve the community overall. So our vision is to hopefully influence business practices for not only a bubble tea shop, but it could be in other service industry that maybe there isn't a public component to it.
How often do you hear from people, there are, I imagine, business owners out there who say, I love the idea, I would love to be able to do this, but it will never be possible for me to pay workers this much for what I used to pay them $7.25 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that goes back to the conversation of minimum wage, mm-hmm. Because I hear this a lot. I'm paying my employees somewhere between $7.25 an hour and $13.50 of what you're paying. If I raise them all up to maybe a midpoint between $7.25 and $13.50, what does that mean for the business? People assume that you can't afford it, but what actually happens, That $725 is 53% of a living wage. Mm-hmm. So you've got a 47% improvement that you've got to realize either in revenue or you've got to realize it in productivity. And through the productivity, I don't have to have as many people because of the flexibility that we just talked about. And there's, a huge market appeal for the knowledgeable consumer to selectively choose to participate in these sorts of businesses. So there's a real possibility of closing that 47% gap.
When you both sat down with pencil and paper to talk about this, did you immediately think, maybe this can work? Did you think this is going to be a home run? I mean, how concerned were you about the actual viability?
I don't know. You know, I don't think about that now. My mm-hmm. inspiration for doing this was because I still stay in touch with some former clients of mine mm-hmm. back when I was a case manager.
Yeah.
And I, about 4 years ago, was meeting with a client, an African woman who had gotten asylum here and was still working, you know, in a fast food restaurant and struggling and working 16 hours at a time or being called in the middle of the night to come show up and then told to go back home and hearing about those kind of abuses. And one day I was talking to her and her eyes just lit up because she said, oh my gosh, guess what? I was talking to, you know, my neighbor and she knows a lady who owns her own gas station. Hmm. And I said, yeah, like I didn't get it. You know, this was the American dream. This was just so exciting to her. And so it got me thinking, well, how could I help you have your own gas station or your own store? You know, how do you get there from here? And, you know, instead of trying to find investment money, I thought, well, maybe, you know, I've heard comments like this enough from my clients. Maybe I should try to get into it myself and see how hard is it if we go with a franchise model and, you know, are those upfront costs what you really think they're going to be and wanted to learn about it that way.
That's really interesting. So you can't fully grasp it until you sort of get your hands dirty.
Right, yeah. Right. And, you know, I have friends who run restaurants and who pay the minimum wage. And we had, you know, a friend we met with when we were planning this saying we were going to do healthcare benefits. And he's like, why would you do that? I mean, he was mad. Mm-hmm. You know, what's your point? And I realize that is totally untenable for most employers. I'm coming at this from a social work background, and I wanted to see what would happen if we put those supports in place. This is an experiment. Will it really make any difference? Is it going to make a difference in their lives if they get a higher paycheck? Is it going to make a difference if they have access to health care? I don't know. Is that going to improve the life of people who are struggling with the lowest wages?
And I think that's what we have to look at, Chris, is the greater well-being and the metrics have got to be at a much higher level. We know that we're making a profound impact in the employees that work with us. We're making a profound impact in the community for this conversation to even be occurring. So getting away from the business school, we do have the pure financials that I can measure success on, but we've got to come up with new metrics on what is the community impact, what is the and in working with the social science schools, how are we actually affecting people's lives, mm-hmm. and how are we creating prosperity?
My guests this hour are Cannon Flowers, who is CEO of the Human Rights Initiative of North Texas, and Serena Simmons Connolly, co-founder of the Human Rights Initiative of North Texas and director of the Harold Simmons Foundation. They are also co-founders of the Demeter Project, which aims to improve the community by improving workplaces and raising wages. We'll resume our conversation in a moment and welcome you to join us. You can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, offering an information session March 15th for its CFP certificate program in Dallas, starting in April. You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guests this hour are co-founders of the Demeter Project, which aims to improve the community by improving workplaces and raising wages. We're here with Serena Simmons Connolly and Cannon Flowers. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I'm curious about how the wide spectrum of backgrounds of employees affects the culture of the workplaces at Chill Bubble Tea and at It's a Grind.
That in itself has been sort of a cultural experiment, and an experiment in a good way. Some of our employees have had barriers to employment. Some haven't. So it's been a real learning experience for someone who has never had a challenge in getting a job to work with someone who has had a challenge in getting a job, and just understanding the differences in those life experiences on both sides. So that mix and diversity we feel has been a plus to what we're doing.
I have to imagine that flexible scheduling and much higher salaries than they would find for the same job at a competitor and benefits help with retention. But I wonder if the climate of the workplace also, in your opinion, helps with retaining employees.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we talk about this all the time, is how do you live respect, you know, and ethics? What does that look like in the workplace? And it has to be mutual. You know, this isn't a welfare program. Mm-hmm. And we had a problem with that in the beginning, of some of the staff, you know, just feeling kind of complacent. And we caught it as fast as we could. And at our management meeting, started talking about, we work together. You know, we need respect from you as well. And do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I think there's all this discussion of late with collective bargaining and such,
right. Mm-hmm.
And I'm following it closely. The term collective bargaining in itself almost sounds like an adversarial process. If I had collective bargaining with a family member, I think it would be pretty serious.
Mm-hmm.
But really all they're wanting is they want a workplace where the employer benefits and the people benefit. And so you've got this institutionalized process that this is the only way that we can come through it, because the history of treating people so disengaging in the workplace has brought us to that place. We have spent time to it's very easy from a business metrics to excuse me, to show, if I pay you $13.50 an hour for Dallas County, I can show you how much more you can afford in housing, how much more you can afford in transportation, all the components that go into it. So then that begged the question with Serena and I was, okay, we've addressed economics of it, but how do we address the rest of the problem? For someone who has lived 20, 25 years at minimum wage or less, then you have this responsibility that I'm making this much more. What does that mean in my relationship with my spouse, with my family? Do I have more financial responsibilities toward them, or am I able to do more for them than I've ever been able to do before? So there's a whole educational component that goes with it too. And I mentioned earlier the causing prosperity. There's really several ways to look at that. One is, I can improve your prosperity if I immediately increase what I'm paying you. But then the intangible or the more softer side is, I can increase your prosperity if I empower you to have the feeling that you can do more, or that you can make more, or you can be more. And that definitely, with the business model that we've got, that part's working. Because after 2 years into it, I've got employees who are engaging not only in their own lives, but they're engaging in the lives of other coworkers, people in the community, and they're becoming more aware, too, of what is social entrepreneurship.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to go back, Serena, to what you talked about with your former client who really her dream was to own her own gas station.
Mm-hmm.
We often hear about the problems of the working poor in putting any money away. Now, even at $13.50 an hour, I think most people would agree who are listening to this that no one's getting rich on that amount of money. Mm-hmm. Is there a component to trying to help workers learn how to manage the extra money they now have?
Yes, absolutely. We offer a 401k. And we offer flexible spending accounts. We've had to have information sessions about that. We talk about – we have monthly all-hands staff meetings, mm-hmm. and plus the ongoing weekly meetings that the employees have with their managers. So communication is the key here. We're constantly talking about, what are your needs? How do we meet those needs? How do you meet our needs? And I didn't know if they would have any interest at all in putting money in a 401k when I know how hard it is to budget when you're making such a low amount of money. But fortunately, a lot of them have decided to utilize it. The flex spending account, we're still some like that idea. Some people have already had hospital procedures done in the last year, and so they know the value of that. And so they want to utilize that. Our younger... younger male employees not so interested.
They're going to live forever.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So, you see those trends coming out.
I think if you've never had a 401k or you've never had medical insurance, and most of these, most service industry jobs don't offer medical insurance. So you've got these benefits, but you have no idea how to use them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole educational process unto itself. You give somebody the medical insurance, they go see their doctor, there's a $25, $30 copay that they may not have that today either. So then you have to educate them on the health savings counter, the flexible spending account. What does that even mean? And if you've never had those economic benefits, there's a huge educational process that goes on.
For people who don't have flexible spending, this is where you put money away tax-free that you can then pull out when you have a medical expense.
Exactly.
It's your money, but you can use it
right.
When the emergency arrises.
Yes, and it reduces your taxable income.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones to Marshall in Denton. Hi, Marshall.
Hi, Chris. I had a question, and then I'll get off the air and hear what you guys have to say about it. Is it really enough to increase the minimum wage or even convince employers to create a better business climate for employees at the local level? Can this be extended to a corporate culture that may not care or maybe they have their own models? And I reflect back on when the then sent back in the very late 60s, then Senator Nixon and liberal Democrat New Yorker Pat Monahan had a bipartisan attempt to start a guaranteed income, which fell on the House floor and never went further. I have serious questions how this can really fly, maybe with small businesses one at a time, but to create really social justice and to create an atmosphere where beyond small business can see any kind of merit on this, can buy into it. And I'll take my y'all's comments.
Thanks for your call.
I think if you look at the model of corporate America, for the large corporations, many of them are already addressing these issues. The fact that the companies are so large in the vast number of employees, our focus here has been it's those that aren't protected under such a huge corporate umbrella. It's people who, as I mentioned, who have had barriers to employment and may not have had the educational opportunities that many of those in corporate America may have had. But I think what we're doing is organic, and we know it's organic. It's grassroots. We're not attempting to change the TIs and the IBMs of the world, but we are trying to make those smaller businesses. And for many of us, those are our day-to-day suppliers to our own personal happiness, whether it's a restaurant or a coffee house or whatever it may be. And those, the consumer can make the conscious decision that I will go to places that actually makes a difference in this particular industry.
Right. Yeah, we're not interested in setting policy here or making people pay this wage. I just wanted to see if it was possible, if we could do it and break even at some point so that then people could elect to do this in their own institution. But also we are learning, you know, that money, the amount of money you pay is not always the most important thing. We've been trying to find another metric for what we're doing. And we almost half, you know, jokingly call it the happiness metric. And we've asked our employees to anonymously write an answer to the question of what makes you happy. And do you think that your workplace plays into that in some way, your current workplace with Demeter Project? And the responses were so heartening. It's like, okay, so we're on to something here. This is it's not about the money. It's about believing in each other, forming trustful relationships. You know, that might sound silly to some people, but it's been so meaningful to us.
We have an email here from Paul and Terrell who writes, when I was a student at a Jesuit university, I was taught that employers had a moral obligation to pay a living wage and that a living wage was enough to support a family. I graduated in 1959. I assume they still teach that. It doesn't seem to have sunk in, but it's nice to hear the term used again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's important. The first year that the coffee house was opened, Demeter Project was formed, we were selected by the Dallas Observer as their best of category, and it was the best of the best place to make a livable wage. Mm-hmm. Well, I was so impressed that they even recognized it, and I'm always getting, please vote on the best place for coffee, for brunch, whatever. But to be recognized across the city, that wasn't hard for us to win, because I'm sure there's not that many that are doing it or aren't publicizing it. And that's the other responsibility that we feel that we do have is if you've ever had a question of whether a living wage would work, and I'm not talking pure economics, but the total package of employee development, we hope that you'll look to Demeter Project to answer that question ultimately.
Are you hearing from other small businesses that say we can't go quite this far, but we want to take some of these ideas and incorporate them? And what are you able to do to help those businesses if they are, in fact, asking?
They're not asking that question specifically. Mm-hmm. But we have already learned, too, that we jumped directly to $13.50 an hour. And
as opposed to scaling up over
exactly,
years.
Scaling up. And then you've also got another question, and that is how do you tie performance to a living wage? Because if you've already capped them at $13.50, then how do you go beyond that? And what? And again, you can keep them happy for a year or two, but their own personal development is there, and you've got to consider that. Making the money is not always the answer, but an increase of any sort, as you know, reaffirms that yes, you're doing good, that we're all doing good. So that's been a huge challenge too. And any advice that I would give is make a living wage your goal, but don't do it overnight. And as you do it, make sure you're not getting into a socialistic type environment that we're moving up the performance curve and we're moving up the living wage curve at the same time.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Paul in Farmers Branch. Hi, Paul.
Hello. I live in Farmers Branch, and we have a substantial Hispanic community, but there really isn't a sense of community among the Hispanics who live there. And I'm curious the extent to which the coffee shop or restaurant helps facilitate or develop a sense of community among those who live nearby.
We see that as a huge responsibility that we've got. Part of the philosophy of the Demeter goddess itself is to build community and to teach people to develop community relationships. And in our businesses, we encourage private space for meetings of organizations, churches, businesses. There's many times you'll go into one of these establishments. There'll be a fantasy football team in there. There could be a religious group in there. And it's across, unfortunately, where the location is for the coffee house, as an example, is close to a major medical center. So there is diverse people moving through, some who live there, some who don't live there. But many of those in the community itself feel that is their coffee place. There's one of our customers who actually lives in Farmers Branch. told me that he takes the train, the Green Line, on Saturday morning from there down to the coffee house. And he says, and I sat at the coffee house for several hours reading, and I feel like I've done the world such a good thing today because not only did I not drove, I took the train down, then I sat in a place where it feels so right to be there.
Are people willing to pay a little bit extra for a cup, or is that something that would make the business not viable to charge a lot more than whatever the competitors might
charge?
Yeah,
we haven't gone there yet just because we're in a low traffic area. I mean, it's got great potential. We're right there facing Baylor Hospital on the Green Line, right next to Deep Ellum. In answer to Paul's question about how have we tried to build community, not just having the community room available to reserve for free, but we also invite a local arts group to come in. And, once a month or we change out the artwork. And we also have a children's time with Diane Tucker of Tucker's Blues. She comes in and once a week on Tuesdays, I think, and does great performances and reading and acting out with the children. And so we have a group of moms and kids that come. And we just wanted to make it a peaceful place, a welcoming place, and I think we've achieved that.
Another thing we haven't talked about is that location on the Green Line is great in terms of drawing in customers. It's got to be good for employees, too, who, if they don't have a car or can't afford one, they've got a way to get to work every day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
1-800-933-5372. We'll go next to Brent in Dallas. Hey, Brent.
Hi, yes. My question is, I wanted to ask the guest if they had considered a revenue sharing model as part of the compensation package. I'll take my question off from here.
Thanks for your call.
2 years into the project is where we're at right now.
Still waiting on the revenue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely that's where we want to move to. Again, coming into a business, establishing a living wage, it's a whole process that you have to go through. We do have a strategic idea that, we'll get to the point. I'm not driving for a 20% profit margin. I'm driving for something less than that. Mm-hmm. And we know that that's much more realistic. And ultimately, we can get to a profit sharing, but we've got to get there first.
My guests this hour are joining us to talk about the Demeter Project. We have co-founders Cannon Flowers and Serena Simmons-Connolly. We'll resume this conversation in a moment and invite you to join us by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education, offering an information session March 15th for its CFP certificate program in Dallas, starting in April. You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Here with us this hour are Serena Simmons-Connolly, who is co-founder of the Human Rights Initiative of North Texas and director of the Harold Simmons Foundation, and Cannon Flowers, CEO of the Human Rights Initiative of North Texas. Together, they are co-founders of the Demeter Project, which aims to improve the community by improving workplaces and raising wages. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We have an email here from Mike in Plano who asks, I heard you mention that productivity improvements allow a business to get by with fewer employees. Do you view this as a desirable trade-off?
Desirable in meeting break-even or a profitable position for the company. Forced productivity isn't an option for us, but sort of an organic productivity, people buying in, employees buying into the mission and chipping in and believing that they can reach further and do more within the workplace. And you do see the productivity. I mean, you can go into either of the stores and you'll see that cooperative productivity happening.
It's got to be a big deal. Yeah, even in a place where the workers are relatively low wage, that they show up happy to work every day. That's often not the case in a lot of places.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it's just extensive ownership, and having ownership at the individual level will increase productivity.
Let's go back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We'll speak to Margaret in Dallas. Hey, Margaret.
Hi. I'm a fan of It's a Grind. I live not far away, and I guess two comments. Someone asked about the cost of their product. I find their product to be better tasting and less expensive than the giant national chain of coffee shops. And the other comment is that they mentioned their community room, which makes it sound a little cold and sterile. It's a delightful little space with wing chairs and nice round chairs you can sit around. And so, I mean, I love that they make it available for groups and individuals, and I've just had nothing but a wonderful experience there.
Thanks so much for your call. You know, what Margaret said points out the fact that it is a business. You are ultimately looking to make a profit. So you can't really skimp on fancy chairs and the things right. that people expect now when they walk into one of these places.
Right. Mm-hmm. Margaret's very nice.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And we do keep very closely on what we're charging versus what our competitors are charging.
And this is a subsidiary of a nationwide chain. Is that right?
Yeah, It's a Grind itself is. Serena and I actually chose to do a franchise for our initial venture. She or I, neither one, have never been in the restaurant business.
So you need a restaurant and a box to
exactly.
start out.
Yeah. So, and we looked for several months, went through a full-blown restaurant model, coffee shop, several service industry type jobs. But yes, It's a Grind is a part of a franchise out of Long Beach, California, who had very similar social entrepreneurs' views toward what we're
yeah.
trying to do.
And they allowed us to implement our own management model.
So it was an easy sell to them as opposed to them saying, we don't want to get anything started
right.
here.
Yeah. Right.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's go to Raymond in Dallas. Hi, Raymond.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Great, thanks.
I guess I wanted to make a comment and by way of a question, and that is that, you know, a lot of the time, first of all, I want to congratulate these ladies. I think that what they're doing is wonderful. But
one gentleman, one lady.
I just wanted to say that you realize how much cleverness it takes for a person to exist in a place like Dallas, Texas, who is living on minimum wage or less. You know, the problem with people that are in that position is not that they're not intelligent. It's not that they're not clever. It's none of that. It's simply a problem of them not having money, you know, and I think that what you all are doing is wonderful, but at the end of the day, it's about empowering workers, and, you know, I know that we're in a society which at the moment is doing everything to make the life of workers more miserable, so I congratulate you. It's really all about empowering workers.
Thanks so much for your call.
That's a very important
yeah.
point. In Dallas County alone, according to the latest census, there's roughly 410,000 people that are living below the poverty line. That's 400,000. That's about the size of Arlington, Texas, everyone living below a poverty line to that magnitude. We understand that what has to happen for the overall workplace to improve and home life to improve is we, from a management and investor's perspective, can do these things in hopes that it spurs all these sorts of conversation from your listeners to the viewers to Dallas Social Venture Partners to the Social Entrepreneurial Alliance, all these organizations. We're just a small piece of it, and it's our attempt at being a catalyst for the conversation as well.
Given that this is sort of an experiment, I know that your goal at this moment is not to scale this everywhere, but to at least understand how it might be possible. Do the people you employ agree to give you more information, perhaps, about their private lives than otherwise might be appropriate for an employer to ask an employee?
I guess the answer is yes. I mean, we do know a lot about their private lives, and I think they know a lot about ours, just because we're hanging out in the coffee shop or the chill bubble tea store, and we talk to each other like real people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we know that there are boundaries. We don't pry into their lives, but they know that if they have a problem, they can either talk to the manager or talk to us, you know, to the owners or to find out, you know, is there anything we know that we can do to help them? So it's very comfortable.
Well, and two, I do talk to him a lot, Chris, about so many people in this world live compartmental lives. They live a work life, they live a home life, or they live a school life.
Sure.
And our idealistic goal is respect and ethics at 360 degrees. And the way you would treat someone you lived with and the way you treat someone you work with, there shouldn't be a vast difference. We should all figure out how to do this. So with that sort of trust, and it took about a year and a half for the employees to truly trust that mm-hmm. business model, then they start opening up, and then you can actually have meaningful conversation.
You know, you often hear about people who start their first business, and there are things that they really prepared for, and they knew what was coming, and other things that took them very much by surprise. And I'm curious about some of the things that you both have learned over this experiment that you thought, I did not think I'd have to worry about that.
Mm-hmm. I learned how hard it is to start a business, a franchise. Now I understand why all those mom and pop stores just, you know, see them for, you know, 1 week and then they're gone.
Yeah.
It's so expensive. So, you know, anybody listening out there, when you see that franchise cost, that's not the only cost you're in for. There's a lot of stuff we learned about construction and just so many ways you can get derailed in this process.
The construction was the first surprise. We were attempting to address improving the workplace for the service industry. We realized that there's a whole other opportunity in the construction industry.
Hmm.
And there was I don't want to say shoddy construction, but questionable construction. So from just a pure business perspective, that was one. When it comes to the employees, again, so much time was spent and is spent on relationship building
mm-hmm.
and building that trust. Initially, they're not going to trust you. So it takes a lot of what I call me being me and just saying what needs to be said. And the managers that report to me, I make it clear to them that treat them the way I would treat you. And it's a no-nonsense approach to how people should be treated.
Do you have any sort of different tolerance for, you know, some managers might worry, well, if I started doing this, then everybody would run over me and take advantage of that. Has that been an issue at all?
I don't know that there's any part of our business that you can't reinvent the universe. It's sort of pure operations.
Mm-hmm.
There's no true glory spots. It's everybody chipping in and doing what needs to be done. So
it's worked out.
It's worked out. Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones now. This time we will speak with Bill in Dallas. Hi, Bill.
Hi, this is Bill. I just wanted to tell your guests that I think this is a great idea. Private enterprise has to work, and there is no real alternative, and I think this is the key. I spent 40 years working for big corporations, and the question I always asked was, how can you expect to make business profit with employees who don't like working there? And the key, as they pointed out, is to seek anonymous input from your employees. Just ask them what the problems are.
Yeah,
that's all.
Thank you so much for your call. That's so interesting. So often the people who are working on the line are the ones who are the most aware of what ought to change.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Speaking of his 40 years and the experience that brought to him, the financial there's more than just a social side of this. There's those strict conservative fiscal types that I have to appeal to as well. And you have to consider a living wage versus a minimum wage and how much more are we pumping into local economy. In our first year, that drove roughly $250,000 in the North Texas economy. And because of that living wage, it's an extra $155,000 to $175,000 that was pumped into the economy. So, and with that comes an empowerment at the individual employee level, because they too know that they are part of that, that they're spending more and that they're engaging more in their communities as well.
What's your sense for someone who just wants to start a business and wants to do it as ethically as possible? Would that person have to have really huge upfront resources to start something like this and to have these sorts of ideas about how to pay people and how to adjust their time?
I don't know that they would have to have huge. We actually chose a sizable operation. I don't know that you'd have to choose one quite that large.
Uh-huh.
And fortunately, back in 2007, when Serena and I started this, there was very little conversation on social entrepreneurship. So I had to reach out to people on the East Coast and the West Coast just to figure out what is this. To me, it wasn't called anything other than this is how you should be doing business. But now, fortunately, there's been this huge groundswell of this conversation. There's so many people to tap into now. You could reach out to us. You could reach out to many of these other organizations who were there's nobody qualified to speak on it because it's a practicing art.
I know that you haven't had a lot of turnover over the time that these businesses have been open. I'm curious about, are there just lines out the door when there is a position open? Are people just dying to work there?
That's interesting. For barista type positions, yes. And I don't know if it's out the door, but we get a steady stream of applications. But I've got an opening right now that's been open for some time, and it's on the website. So and it's a non-barista position. So I'm sort of wondering, you know, why is there not an interest for executive assistant versus barista? So it's very interesting.
Maybe barista is like a sexier job,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, or more engaging. I mean, I really do believe that there's a certain culture in both chill bubble tea and in coffee, that there's the exchange with the customer, the relationship with the customer, and it's a culture unto itself.
Is it still important to you when you're hiring people, do you think, will this person fit into the culture that we've created?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We think about that. And we, you know, state the mission of Demeter Project and just watch them and see if it looks like they really get it or not.
Yeah, if they get it. And that's that ownership thing that I was talking about. Mm-hmm. If you come because you're coming for the money, you'll be satisfied for a 3 to 6 month window.
Right.
And beyond that, it's – and I remind the staff, too, that each one of us are making an investment here. They may not be investing – financially, but they're investing with their beliefs. They're investing with their increased productivity and ownership to make sure that we can achieve the mission.
So what's next? Just trying to get to that place where
you're
making
a profit. We want
to
break even. Yeah. Yes, please come to our stores and buy things. We want to break even because we do have people approach us all the time saying, can you open up a store here on my campus? Can you open up a store here at my business? And people love the concept, but mm-hmm. can we make it viable?
How much of that is our responsibility in the public that we make choices about where we put our $4 for coffee or whatever?
Well, I think that's an excellent question because back to my Best of Dallas – I really think it is kind of sad that it's been 4 years or 3 years since we were recognized as a livable, best place for a livable wage. I'm not vying for that today, but, but we do need to, the media needs to start highlighting more, and thank God for NPR and KERA for even bringing these topics forward, because I do think we're at a place, we've gone through vast corporate scandal, we've gone through a pretty serious recession, and so people are smarter about what they're doing with their money. And the products that we're offering are, they're very personal products. It's your cup of tea or your cup of coffee and interchange or exchanging with people in the community. So there is a public responsibility if you're interested in other businesses who are attempting to do what Demeter Project is wanting to do.
Cannon Flowers and Serena Simmons Connolly are co-founders of the Demeter Project. You can find information about it at DemeterProject.com or on the think page of KERA.org. Cannon and Serena, thank you both so much
thank
for being
you, Chris.
Here.
Thank you.
My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.